Now, on Sunday, the former Minister for Justice, Charlie Flanagan, said that Gardaí should get involved in the alleged eye-gouging incident at Croke Park when the Galway player Damien Comer was the victim of the eye-gouging incident. And he said it was a matter for the Gardaí. They needed to get involved. Now, before going on air, I spoke to Morgan Crowe, who's a solicitor with Ogier Le Mann, who are sports law specialists that represent government bodies, national sporting associations, clubs and athletes. And I asked him, I got his response to what the former Minister for Justice was suggesting, that the Gardaí should get involved.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that no complaint has actually been made as of yet to the Gardaí. I think they released some sort of statement yesterday on that. But generally, yeah, I mean, the guards would need a complaint in order to investigate. I think they can inquire themselves without a complaint, but they might do so in rare and unusual circumstances. So as of yet, there's been no complaints. But the vast majority of these sporting incidences would be dealt with by the governing body, which in this case is the GAA, and by their internal disciplinary measures. The guards and, you know, the courts in general are very, very reluctant to get involved in sporting related incidents.
There hasn't been any precedent or any case that you can think of where an affray broke out on a field of sporting play and it was deemed to enter into the area of public order offences. That hasn't come up, has it?
No, I mean, not in my experience, no. I don't think that's come up. I mean, I know that there have been convictions in the UK and in other jurisdictions for completely reckless challenges. I know of one case in football where somebody got a 6-month conviction for essentially breaking someone's leg in what was deemed to be a deliberate act. But the standard for criminal offences is very high. You have to have, it has to be beyond reasonable doubt that there was an intent to injure and that the act was done by, I suppose, the accused. I know that in terms of maybe specific gouging incidences, I know that somebody who lost his eye and was the perpetrator was prosecuted, that was thrown out of the court because he couldn't actually be identified clearly. So the standard essentially is very, very high in the criminal sphere. I would think it's unlikely that a criminal case will ensue from this, but, you know, we wait to see.
And that eye-gouging incident that you referred to, that was the case that was thrown out of court, that eye-gouging, did that take place on the sporting field?
That was a rugby match incident in Wales, and the victim had to get 8 stitches, and the police took a case against the alleged accused, but it was deemed that they couldn't, establish beyond reasonable doubt that he actually did do the eye gouge, or that an eye gouge, I suppose, caused the 8 stitches. The evidence showed that essentially the 8 stitches were required after a punch rather than not an eye gouge. So the accused was acquitted of all charges. So it shows that this is a really, really high bar for a criminal conviction.
Is it the case, Morgan, that there are more civil actions being brought by people who feel that they were the victims of assault during a match?
Yeah, I mean, again, I suppose that would be the standard in bringing a civil case is easier to meet. So it's on the balance of probabilities, which means basically you have to prove your case 51% rather than kind of 99% in the criminal sphere. So I mean, the most famous example of that is the O.J. Simpson on a trial where he was acquitted of murder essentially in criminal law, but then the family of I think Ron Goldman, who was one of the the people who was murdered took a civil action and for damages, and they won. And so Mr. Simpson had to pay millions in damages. So in terms of sporting incidences, it would certainly be easier to meet. But what the course has said is that the standard for meeting civil liability, it's really a lot higher than just purely showing a breach of the rules. So you really have to, serious foul play. So you'd really have to, you'd have to show some sort of damage that the player suffered, and that it caused him some sort of impact on his life, etc. So, you know, maybe that I'm a pilot, and because I was assaulted on a pitch, that was not an inherent risk of the sport. You know, I can't maybe fly a plane, etc. Something along those lines. It wouldn't be very common, but it's the easier route to go than the criminal route.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. So it's still relatively uncommon that people would take civil actions arising out of sporting incidents.
Yeah, so I mean, the kind of in sports, there's deemed to be what's called, you know, an inherent risk of playing sports. So, for example, there was a red card in that Armagh-Galway match, which, you know, that was basically somebody went for, I think, a shoulder-to-shoulder challenge and ended up shouldering a Galway player's head. You know, if that happened on the street, that would be assault. But because it happens in the sporting context, all players are deemed to essentially consent to those type of risks that are just an inherent nature of sport. So that Galway player could not take a civil case, you know, for that type of instance. Now, obviously, gouging is not deemed to be an inherent risk of sport. So it is open then to take a civil case, but there would have to be some sort of damage established. So, you'd have to get medical evidence involved, etc., to show that because of X, you know, incident, I suffered X damage, which means I cannot do or pursue X in my career, etc., and therefore I want compensation. Effectively, I want money.
Is it becoming more common that if there are controversies that sporting administration bodies have to adjudicate upon, that some of the parties may get solicitors involved?
Well, absolutely. Like in the governing body, so in internal disciplinary matters, yeah, absolutely. You'd have it wouldn't be uncommon for solicitors to represent players at hearings. So generally, what happens is that the referee has submitted his report as of last night, and then the internal disciplinary committee, which I think is the CCC in the GAA, they'll review the report and they'll essentially decide, you know, if there's any potential offences that were committed, which obviously in this case there were probably numerous potential offences, but one of them was obviously the eye gouging incident. So that player will essentially, they'll have a hearing where there might be witnesses called, evidence given, and it wouldn't be uncommon for solicitors to attend that hearing to put their client's case forward. And you'll see in a lot of GAA matters that sometimes a sanction might be handed down at the initial hearing, and then that can be appealed to an appeals body. And again, that's probably the more common area for solicitors to appear, or else the final body, it goes up to a body called the DRA, which is an independent kind of arbitration body. And you would always have solicitors and potentially barristers attending at the DRA. You know, there was a famous case where I think Dermot Connolly got acquitted kind of the last minute at the DRA.
This is the Dublin player.
Correct, yeah, correct. So essentially, yeah, once the lawyers get involved, they generally get involved more at the appeals part of things, and it wouldn't be uncommon for sanctions to be overturned, particularly where there's a match involved maybe the following week. I know Armagh are out of the All-Ireland now, but so that doesn't apply. But yeah, I mean, solicitors will be involved, absolutely.
And that's solicitor Morgan Crowe, who's with Ogier Le Menn Solicitors, who are sports law specialists that represent government bodies, sporting associations, clubs, as well as athletes.